Welcome to the Coworkers Podcast with Jesse and Shaney,
where every believer is a coworker in God's mission.
Hi, friends. Good to be with you all today as we are jumping into another podcast, the third part in our series on heart work.
Yeah, it's a rainy day here and we're sitting in our spot looking out the window, have the kids playing at the park, and ironically, I'm sipping my cup of tea as we talk about idolatry.
Yes, we'll explain the irony there.
Convict me of that. Later. That's hard to figure out. That'll what be that some irony
immediate
might be.
Obedience, immediate application. You can just put that to the side. That'll be your last sip.
No.
So today we're going to deal with the issue of idolatry. The reason we've been digging into the heart work is because we believe that the Bible teaches that what goes on in our heart is the most important thing about us. The way that our heart engages with the truths about who God is, how we connect with Him through our heart, that determines everything we do. And so the heart work that we're talking about is really, in a lot of ways, the most practical issues that we can be addressing. Mm-hmm. And idolatry is right at the core of that, right? It's right at the base of what we talk about when we're looking at heart work, because worship is what we are created for. Mm-hmm. We talked last time about motivation to be involved in Great Commission work, motivation for missions, and those words of John Piper's that we talked about, right? The missions exist because worship doesn't. And so that points to the reality that that goes all the way back to the original creation. The means by which, and really the purpose for which we are created, was to worship the only one who's worthy of it. And idolatry is the thing that attacks that very purpose. Yeah. It attacks it right at the core of who we are and what we are designed for. We're going to talk through how idolatry attacks us in our everyday lives, what it looks like, what's the fruit of it, and ways that we can address it.
Yeah, and I'll begin by sharing a working definition of idolatry. Idolatry is when we turn to anything as a substitute for God. It can be all kinds of things. We'll talk about all kinds of examples. You could probably name a few. Potential idols in your life. Caffeine, Netflix, work. There's plenty of common ones. But it's not just maybe the sinfulness or potential sinfulness of that thing. It's the position that we give it in our lives. That's the huge danger and destruction of idolatry. And this has been a big lesson in my life, particularly in the last few years, since I studied Isaiah a few years ago. And the whole Bible has so much to say on idolatry, but I'm just going to share some biblical truths from Isaiah, because Isaiah is all about God alone is to be high and lifted up and exalted in our lives, in our hearts, and nothing else. And so because of that, because God alone is worthy of that above all position, then nothing else is worthy of that. And God should never, ever be second place. Yeah. Never, ever. So I want to share a few biblical truths from Isaiah. Like Jesse said, it's all practical, every bit of this. And what I love about Isaiah is we see ourselves in it. I mean, it's 66 chapters of so much judgment on these nations, but when we dig into it, we find ourselves. God takes a flashlight and shines in our hearts and says, oh, look at that. You're just like this that I wrote through Isaiah thousands of years ago. These scriptures are powerful because they go right to our hearts. Yeah. They show us who we are inside. So I pray that will happen a little bit in this episode with some of the truths that I'm sharing. You know, one of the most famous passages in Isaiah is Isaiah 6. And so I want to begin kind of with that image that Isaiah has, the vision of God. And even there, God, he says, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. And we see the holiness, the majesty, the higher than everything else, high and lifted up. That is the vision that God gave Isaiah. And that's the vision I want us to start out with, because that will color how we see the idols in our life. And it will show us why this is so crucial. It's not like sometimes we can be like, oh, what are the idols you struggle with? And it's almost this like fun personality thing, you know?
It's like your Enneagram number.
Yeah.
Which ones are your
right. But no, it's it's actually very serious, because the only thing God has to say about idolatry in the Bible is that he judges it.
Yeah, he hates it.
And he's going to knock them all down.
That's right. And that passage, significantly, right, Isaiah 6 is the famous calling passage as well. Who will go for me? It's not a coincidence that Isaiah's vision of the Lord high and lifted up is also in the context of his being called and sent out, set apart for the ministry, is that this affects the way that we see our own calling. This affects the way that we're able to take the gospel to people around us and to the nations, is that we have to put God in the proper place in our hearts, mm-hmm. and then we can serve and fulfill the calling that he's given to us.
Yes, and I think sometimes it's easy for us to downplay our idols, especially if they're not idols that are like inherently destructive,
yeah.
right? I mean, if you're addicted to crack cocaine, maybe it's like different, okay?
Sure.
But if you're struggling with like, maybe I watch too much Netflix, mm-hmm. or maybe I work too hard, mm-hmm. that's a hugely common one, yep. with people in ministry, just having an idol of work and ministry success. And so it can be easy to think, well, I mean, this is important. It's not like I'm going to quit the ministry. Mm-hmm. Or even like, what's the big deal if we watch a movie together in the right. evenings? But I think what God has shown me is when I make a habit of turning to those things instead of God, mm-hmm. I'm missing out on God, first of all, which is a huge loss. Like, we minimize that. We act like no big deal. So I watched a Jason Bourne movie.
I can make it up later.
Sure. Like, it's fine. I'll have a good quiet time tomorrow. Right. But we miss out on God, who's the only one who can fulfill all of our needs. And we're training our hearts to go after those things. Yeah. So we make our hearts habitually after these quick fixes that are terrible substitutes for God, yeah. when we compare them to God.
It's no coincidence that the kind of the revival or the rediscovery of the gospel that happened with the breakout of the Protestant Reformation was accompanied by a lot of people talking about idolatry in the way that we're talking about it here. It's sort of a rediscovery of biblical idolatry, because it is, I think, part of Cheney's point of not seeing idolatry for what it is and really how wicked it is and how it robs us of what God desires for us. But also, it's just easy to see as we read through Isaiah, as we read through the Old Testament, and even some parts of the New Testament as well, idolatry in our minds can be this, well, that was something they struggled with then, because there were,
yeah.
there were physical idols, right?
Absolutely.
There were things that were being made, crafted by hand, the golden calf. And where we live today, mm-hmm. in South Asia, we are surrounded by mm-hmm. idols, what they call the murtis. Mm-hmm. And they are everywhere that you look. You can see handcrafted mm-hmm. idols.
Yeah.
And it's just such a vivid reminder that those things are actually being built in our hearts. Mm-hmm. And the ones that are in our hearts are even more threatening than the ones that we can see, because a lot of times they're kept hidden. And a lot yeah. of times, like you said, we minimize. It's just like, that's
oh, yeah.
not a big deal.
And we love to pretend that our idols are less bad.
That's right.
Like, less offensive to God. That is something God convicted me of so much studying Isaiah, was, Shaney, how dare you look at your Hindu neighbor and in a superior way and judge her for worshiping these statues? You think your idols are any less offensive to God than hers? Mm. I mean, I grew up knowing about Jesus from as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. Yes, idolatry of any kind is offensive. So I want to share five truths from Isaiah on idolatry,
yeah.
okay? And we're just going to talk through these and then, of course, talk about how do we fight this? What's the answer? First one, as we've already been talking, is that idolatry is ultimately about exalting self over God. It's about my power, my self-sufficiency, my wisdom, instead of depending on God for all of those things. And there are so many examples of all of these in Isaiah, of people looking to worldly wisdom instead of God. In Isaiah chapter 2, it talks about our lofty pride and trusting in our own resources, our own protection and power instead of God. Chapter 3 talks about wanting to impress others with our physical appearance.
Nobody struggles with that today.
No, certainly not. That's beyond at least missionaries.
Sure.
Chapter 9 is like when we trust in our own strength and sufficiency. It says, it talks about our pride and arrogance of heart. And chapter 10, again, talks about arrogant hearts, arrogant speech, boastful looks. And it talks about taking credit for our successes as if we accomplish those things instead of acknowledging it was all God. And there, it gives an example there. The king of Assyria said, "By the strength of my hand, I have done it. By my wisdom, for I have understanding." And that, if we're honest, is what every one of us wants. Our flesh.
The American way.
We want to say, "I've done it. I'm powerful. I'm a hard worker. I know what's best. I can get it done."
Yeah. I think it's important here, just the point you make about self, that idolatry, oftentimes we think of something else that we're worshiping, mm-hmm. right? There's this thing out there, whether it is mm-hmm. a handcrafted actual image, an idol, or money or power, whatever it is, but really, when you trace it to the root, mm-hmm. you're actually worshiping yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually worshiping the things that bring you the most joy. You've actually mm-hmm. put yourself in yeah. place of God. That's kind
yes.
of the root of idolatry.
That's what we want.
Yeah.
We ultimately want to be God.
Mm-hmm.
And Isaiah does, just as I was studying it, I put some of these examples into categories, and I saw like three main categories of ways that we do this. One was when we turn to man-made sources of help or power.
Mm.
When we're in times of need. The second was turning to man-made sources of worth or identity.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third was just pleasure, mm-hmm. like lust of the flesh,
yeah.
make me feel good and happy and safe and comfortable mm-hmm. right now. So help and power, worth or identity, and pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see how I think all of my idols would fit into one of those
yeah.
three categories.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's our first truth, is idolatry is all about me, myself, and just that desire. We all truly want to be self-sufficient. We like to sing songs about, oh, like brokenness is what I long for. But we actually don't want it.
Yeah.
We all want to be strong. No
That's
one
right.
likes feeling needy.
And want to be seen as being strong.
Yes.
Right? We want
yeah.
others to see
Right,
that.
Right. Okay, number two is that idolatry is the way of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And of everyone who does not know God. This is the tendency of every single human heart. Isaiah 2:8 says, "Their land is filled with idols. They bow down to the work of their hands, to what their own fingers have made." We can all apply that to our hearts. Our hearts are filled with idols. John Calvin famously said that human hearts are idol factories. If we just take 10 minutes and ask God to help us examine our hearts, and we get honest with ourselves, we all know it's true.
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah.
We are idol factories. And again, when you live in a Hindu country, don't give in to thinking like judgmentally about all the idols
mm-hmm.
around us, because human hearts are idol factories. And your most beloved, admired Christian preacher, author is dealing with idolatry.
Even John Piper,
wow. Yes. And we can go listen to his sermons on this topic. That will be much better. So it's also the philosophy of the world we're living in. There's a couple of verses in Isaiah in chapter 2 and chapter 30 when Isaiah talks about it as like filling our lives with worldly things. And he has this image of striking hands with the world and like making an alliance with the world. So when we go after the idols of the world, we're not only believing the lies of the world, believing Satan's lies, but we're actually lying ourselves. That's what Isaiah 30 says. We're rebelling against God's word, and we are unwilling to hear the instruction of the Lord. Isaiah says we're believing the smooth things, the illusions of worldly philosophies and idolatry. And they are. They're all illusions.
Yeah.
They're all these beautiful illusions of how happy and good these things will make us feel.
And they're just even magnified today. I think in our over media saturated culture, all those things are put in front of us constantly through
mm-hmm.
our devices,
mm-hmm.
through media, through TV, through the computer. I mean, we're mm-hmm. high-fiving the world all day long,
yeah,
right?
We
Striking
are.
Hands with the world.
Yes. And you can see it when you watch movies, for sure. So many movies. I mean, the main characters, it's like, oh my goodness, is this person even mortal or is he like God?
Sure, yeah. Jason Bourne.
Jason Bourne.
That's right.
We
I
watched.
Finally introduced Shani to the Jason Bourne series.
We watched the series. And at the end
that
of every.
That was the takeaway was, oh, this is like idolatry because he's like an image of God.
Because he's perfect. He's
yeah.
indestructible.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, moving on. Number three is the truth that our idols are worthless, empty, and will not help or profit us. That's from Isaiah 30. And we must be sure of this. So yes, you might be thinking, well, ministry is not worthless. It's not empty. It's obedience. So when you have an idol that is actually a good gift from God, but you're struggling to keep it in its right place, this is what I think clarifies that issue. The moment we start using it as a substitute for God is the moment it becomes destructive in our lives. Yeah. Because it can't be in that position. It can't be God. It will never do what only God can do. And so, sure, if you keep that as a good gift that actually you are using to get more of God, then it's good, right? If you're doing ministry for God and through God's strength, and you don't need ministry or work to give you worth or identity or make you feel good about yourself, then it is good. But the minute we start treating it as God, it becomes destructive and offensive to God.
And just be honest here. There's always some of that mixed in.
Yes.
It's never like we live and we do ministry in this unalloyed state of, I have perfect motives right now.
Right.
Like, there's always that temptation in there. There's always some of that that's mixed in.
Yeah.
And so it's not like the case that we have to get our hearts totally right before we can do anything.
No.
Just identifying it along the way.
Yeah.
Addressing it as it comes and always being willing to walk in the light on it and just recognize it for what it is.
Yeah. I think fighting for it daily and being honest about it and whatever we need to do. I mean, if we need to every morning say, like, Jesus is better than ministry. Jesus is better than coffee. Jesus is better than Netflix, whatever it is. The fourth one is that idolatry is addictive, it's deceptive, and it's always after our utmost devotion. And so we keep falling for the same old things over and over and over. It's not usually real creative, and it's never enough.
Yeah.
We actually need them daily. And Isaiah, again, he gives us great pictures of this. He talks about in Isaiah 5, how we will rise early in the morning, we will tarry late in the evening for our idols. We will sacrifice for them. We will do whatever it takes to get them, often on a daily basis. And they lie to us. They never give us what we want. And it's like that image of Smeagol where he is like, his ring, his precious, like, possesses him. He has to have it. He doesn't even care about anything else. That's how we can kind of become.
Yeah. That's a Lord of the Rings reference for you non-Lord of the Rings nerds out there.
Yes.
Smeagol, Gollum. But I think it just shows as well how it's talked about in the New Testament. There's two places in Ephesians 5:5 and Colossians 3:5, where idolatry is basically equated with covetousness. That's what Paul says in both those places, that idolatry is covetousness, and just speaks to that desire that we have, that the nature of covetousness is that it's never filled.
Mm-hmm.
You always want what you see, maybe that someone else has, or you think that you need, and it's never filled. You're never satisfied. You're always looking to fill it back up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a good picture in Isaiah. You'll go to great lengths to fill that desire, and it will always leave us empty.
Right. You'll sacrifice your family.
Yeah.
I mean, do like crazy stuff. And I think we also shouldn't be surprised by this, though, by the strength of that desire, because it's the way of our flesh. It's just instant gratification, right? So, okay, I feel bored or I feel stressed. I could go watch a movie, or I could go read my Bible and worship and pray. The movie is so easy.
Right.
It requires nothing of me. It instantly feels good.
Right. It gives enough of a veneer of comfort.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a quick fix. It's a quick fix. And so I think even acknowledging that, Jesus is infinitely better, but he often requires some work out of us to feel that.
Yep.
It's not an instant thing.
No.
Don't be surprised when your flesh wants these super inferior things.
And I think it's just good for us to remind ourselves of the reality that we're in a fight. You have to make war against the flesh. And so just to remind ourselves of that, I think we get tired sometimes. We get exasperated with, why isn't this easier? You know, why isn't it just that I can turn to the Lord, open the Bible, read a little bit, and like my heart will be fixed? And it's just not that way. The flesh is just too strong. The enemy wants too much that we would fall into this. There's just so many things that are working against us in that, which the grace of God can overcome. The power of the Spirit can overcome all of that, but we just have to turn our hearts and our attentions towards Him.
Yeah. The last truth is that God has designed us to be worshipers. It's in our DNA. We are going to worship. Every person on the planet today is worshiping something, and our hearts are going to exalt something, to look to something every day to fill us up. So if we're not training our hearts to turn to God, they're going somewhere else, yeah, automatically. And this is why it's not enough to just try to get rid of the idols in our life. We simultaneously need to be training our hearts to love and worship God. I'm studying Psalms this year. I've been amazed. Worshiping God through singing praises is commanded over and over and over. And it's the first time I thought to myself, oh, is it a sin if I don't sing praises to God? Because he tells us to, seriously. And I realized this is why it's so important to God, because he knows I'm going to worship something. Yeah. And if I don't get up and sing some praises to him, my heart's going to sing some praises to something else. So just like training ourselves, yeah, to worship God.
Yeah. Just fighting the flesh through that and seeing that worship, it's not like a supplement. I don't know. I feel like sometimes it's just
like an extra bonus.
Songs, kind of an extra bonus.
You might get it some. Right? Yeah.
Just something you add on there. But just to see the power in that we are through that, we're directing our hearts to what it's proper for us. The only thing that's proper for us to worship.
Yes. And when we do that, like we said, it's not often the super quick fix, but if we spend some time with the Lord, he does fill us up. He does show us. His presence is so much better. He is so much better than these other gods. And I just had this image. One of our children has a security blanket, and this blanket is like ragged and stained and old, and no one likes it. But to my child, it's like her precious. She wants it. If she had her way, she would have it with her all the time. And we are like, yeah, there's a time and a place for that. You keep that in your bed, okay? But that's how our idols are. They're ugly and gross compared to anything else. Our friends could all probably tell us what our idols are, yeah, in our lives. Yeah. And so...
And let's, I mean, again, we watch movies, folks. We drink caffeine.
Yes. Right?
We do those things. So, again, this is not... You can't or shouldn't ever do things like that where you are just doing things just for the pleasure of it. It really is about, how's it ordered in your hearts? Where's your desire, and why are you doing it? Yeah. Why are you seeking it out? You know when you're trying to just escape.
Sure.
You know that feeling in your heart where it's like, man, I feel like I should do something to fix what's going on in my heart, and I want to just do the easy thing right now.
So let's talk about some ways to fight this. How do we identify idols? How do we fight them in our lives? The obvious answer is to spend time in prayer and reflection. Ask the Holy Spirit. And I think take comfort in the fact he will only shine light on things that he is going to give you the power to knock down. There's nothing to be afraid of. He will give you the power to do it.
Yeah. So many of them, I think our idols have power as long as they're in the dark, as long as they're unexposed, unarticulated, just sort of there is this thing that we don't think about too much.
Right.
And just the power through the Spirit to be able to see those things clearly for what they
confess
are.
Them. Yep. When we confess them, they lose their power. Yep. I have experienced that so many times in my life. It gives me motivation to confess to my friends because there's something that happens.
Yep.
Some questions we can ask ourselves: what do I need every day? What do I need to be happy? What can I not live without? You know, Jesse and I have had the Lord pressing us on different things in our lives that we know, we have a tendency to turn towards too much. As an example, last few years, we've been doing a fast from caffeine once a year for a month, just to prove, like, to ourselves, can we just be willing to give this up? If we can't give it up for a while, then, there's a problem there, right?
It's a red flag.
Or just taking sometimes weeks to, no social media or entertainment. We need to be willing to give them up. Some other things I think we can ask ourselves for some of those good gifts that God gives us that can become idols is, am I using this to experience more of God, or am I using it as an escape, as a substitute for God? And again, just being willing to fight against those, to name them, to confess them, to say them out loud, and know it's going to be a fight. Maybe put some post-it notes up in your bathroom and remind yourself.
And that's a confession with brothers and sisters too. And that's a key, not only bringing those things before the Lord, but regularly making a habit of confessing those to other people who know you well, mm-hmm. that know that those things are struggles for you, mm-hmm. and that you can be honest with, and just bring those things to the light, and again, just cut their power out by bringing them out and exposing them.
Yeah, and I think especially for full-time Christian workers, the idolatry of like our ministry, our work, yeah. is so common. And we've talked many times over the years about Sabbath, like the place of Sabbath in our lives. And, you know, what's your theology of Sabbath? One thing that I think is important to think about for Sabbath is if I'm never willing to take a day off of work, whether that's weekly, whether it's like, oh, I can't do that, I'm going to go a month without doing that. Yeah. At the least, it's a red flag for idolatry of work in my life. If I just can't let go for a day, my work is so important and I'm so important that I can't just stop for a day. It's at least like a red flag to, oh, maybe I need to spend some time praying about that.
Yeah. So I've sought sanctification in this area by taking an afternoon nap. That's become my...
It's true. Hey, you've gotten kind of regular.
I'm just going to take this bull by the horns. Go take a nap, just like Jesus did.
The world can live without you.
Jesus took naps.
For 20 minutes.
Yep. There you go.
That's good.
I think the ministry success, that really is such a key one for us. Anybody in ministry, I think, really, and it's not even full-time ministry. I think anytime you're involved in it, anytime you're around a community that values those things and that you have the opportunity to get recognized for mm-hmm. being good at that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been in roles, positions of leadership now for a while, there's just that temptation that as the leader, you carry this reputation that you're known to people as somebody who, you know, does things well, that your identity gets wrapped up in those things. And that would be, of the idols, this is the one probably that I am most susceptible to, alongside of coffee and Jason Bourne movies. It's just that that desire to have other people look and to see and applaud what I'm doing and who I am.
Yeah.
And to recognize that, man, that is just ugly in itself. You have to bring that out into the light. Mm-hmm. And you do that in community. You do that through people getting to know you by being vulnerable, sharing the ways that you're struggling. Mm-hmm. I was reminded of this recently. We've been reading through the Sermon on the Mount with the kids in our morning time together in the Bible. And Jesus's command to do things in secret. Mm. That if you do things in the open, if you pray like the Pharisees do in the open, that when you get the praise of man, you have received your reward. That's all you get. Mm-hmm. But when mm-hmm. God, who sees in secret, he'll reward you. I think that's just such a key indicator, a good example of what idolatry looks like mm-hmm. as we're looking for the praise of man. Mm-hmm.
I pray that this has shed some light on some of the idols in your life and not just made you feel guilty, but made you think, oh, yes, I want to fight these. I want to experience God. I don't want to try to substitute anything for God.
We were talking about this in preparation. Isaiah, the picture is idolatry and judgment, right? There was incredibly violent judgment on people who were succumbed to idolatry, right? God's own people, including the surrounding nations. And so the key is, as we're talking about the way, how do we fight this? We have to remember that this has been fought for us, mm-hmm. right? That all of that punishment for idolatry, or that we rightly deserve mm-hmm. every single time that we're tempted towards it in our hearts, mm-hmm. Jesus Christ took every single instance of that, every punishment on himself and paid the penalty. And that's what we walk in. We walk in that victory through.
Well, and that's another beautiful thing about Isaiah. There's some of the most beautiful promises of Jesus scattered throughout. Right. And they're so much more beautiful because they're surrounded by like judgment, 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 sinful, prideful, arrogant hearts. And then you have a beautiful promise about Jesus and how in returning and rest will be your salvation. Yeah. And so those promises about Jesus are that much more beautiful and powerful when we see how ugly and destructive the idols are in our lives.
That's right. Friends, keep fighting. It's a fight worthy of our attention every single day, just mm-hmm. to believe the promises of God for us, to live and walk in the power the Spirit supplies, looking to Jesus, founder and perfecter of our faith. Thanks, friends.